I'm Phil C.
And I'm Lynn.
And together,
we're Rome and Oz.
Real interviews.
With real people.
On location.
With a great mix of Aussie music.
As requested by the people we interview.
Follow us on Facebook.
Or check us out. AllAussieRadio.com.au.
Now syndicated too.
Backwater Country, 87.6 FM.
Tuesdays and Fridays.
At 9 PM.
All interviews are live.
And on location.
And may vary in audio quality from segment to segment.
So, Phil, what's on the show this week?
Well, I'm going to start with John Whitehead from The Man from Snowy River Museum.
And then we take a look at the High Country Rail Trail and stop in at the old trestle bridge near Tallangatta.
And then straight after that, I'll be talking with Jenny Boardman, talking all about the Man from Snowy River Festival.
And then we stop in and visit Roger and Helen, full-time travellers.
That's absolutely right. They've been travelling for quite a long while, listeners. And apart from all of those great chats, I'm also going to be bringing you a great mix of Aussie music as requested by the people we interview. So, listeners,
on with the show.
Oh, welcome back, listeners. I'm Phil C. And yes, we're still roaming Oz. I'm actually in Corryong with John Whitehead at the Man from Snowy River Museum. How are you this morning, John?
Okay.
Okay. Hey, look, I've got to tell you, you're a 90-year-old gentleman and you're looking very sprightly for your age. How long have you been with the museum?
How long have I been with it? Well, I was president for 31 years and I put in several years before that.
Okay. And I understand you've only just stepped down to vice president about a month ago.
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's fantastic that you've put so much time into something so wonderful. Tell us a few things for the listeners about this wonderful museum of yours here in Corryong.
Yes. As you walk in, we'll be with the Man from Snowy River Museum.
Mm-hmm.
We have some of Jack Riley's regalia, his saddlebag and watch,
yes,
et cetera. That's about the first thing you see when you come through the door.
Okay.
And then we turn and there is Jim Simpson's rug.
Now tell us about that rug, Jim, because that's, John, because that is really impressive, that rug. Tell us a little bit about that, the history of that.
Well, it's a 6-foot square map of Australia knitted by Jim when he was a prisoner of war in Stalag 4B in Germany.
Right.
And knitted from memory because I don't think the Germans would have had a map for him.
Definitely not, unless they were going to use it against us. So he knitted this magnificent rug whilst he was a prisoner of war. How long would it have taken him to make that, do you think? Because it's a huge rug.
Yeah, well, I believe it took him about 18 months to gather all the bits of wool together. Some of them are only about a foot long, and if they were too worn, he'd roll two or three together to get the ply he wanted.
Right.
And served for colours.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got the coats of arms of each state on it too.
Yes.
And very thankful to a Canadian chap that was shot down. He had new hockey socks on and had all the colours he wanted in them, and he gave him about 50 cigarettes and knitted him another pair of socks to get those for the colour.
Fantastic. And the thing is, it's so intricate in its detail. He's even got the mountain ranges and he's got the reef on this rug.
Yes, and he didn't forget Tassie.
No, he didn't. He didn't forget Tasmania as well. All the little islands out off Tasmania.
Yes.
He's even got those on there.
He even got a little red dot on it for Corryong, and Lake Eyre was full of water too, by the look of it.
Okay. Now, I understand that they wanted to steal this rug and take it to Canberra. Tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, it's got a story of its own, that rug.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about the rug.
Yeah, right from the start.
Yep.
Yeah, well, when the Russians released them from the prisoner of war camp,
mm-hmm,
they had to, they just opened the gates and let them go, and they had to work their own way across Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Jim was actually out of camp when the Russians got there because the Germans had left.
Yes.
But taken all the tucker with them.
Right.
So he was out trying to scrounge something for them to eat.
Okay.
One of his mates grabbed the blanket and then gave it to him when he caught up to them down the track.
Okay.
when they got to the river where the Americans were on the other side, the Russian guards and the American guards weren't letting anyone across the river.
Right.
The Russian guard said to the Americans, he said, "I know these men."
Right, yeah.
He said, "I was in the prison camp next to them, and whenever we ran out of food, they gave us food. Let them through."
Okay. Okay, now I understand. Now, that was great. They let him through. And I also understand that when they were ready to fly them back home, he wasn't going to leave without his rug. Is that correct?
That's right.
So he said, "If I can't take my rug, I'm not going. I'm going to walk."
Yeah, going to keep walking.
Okay. And they obviously took him because he's still got his rug and it's here at this beautiful Man from Snowy River Museum.
And the American let him take the rug on the train plane because his wife was a knitter and Jim had to take it.
Okay, fantastic. Now, what else can our listeners expect to see here at the museum? You've got, I understand, out the back, you're working on an actual replica of the original Man from Snowy River hut.
Yes. We have photos taken in about 1904 with Jack Riley at the door of his hut, so we've been able to scale the hut from that.
Yes.
And yes, we're using all traditional equipment.
That was the thing that amazed me. Traditional equipment, and it's all done by volunteers. Yes. It's not quite finished yet, but hopefully you're going to have that done very soon.
No, well, we've been spitting some of the shingles and that during some of the festivals, and that creates a lot of interest.
Okay.
With the visitors too.
Okay.
To see the shingle splitters.
Now, what else can we see? Like, where are we standing right now in this particular room? What's the display here, John? The
display here is all cameras, going right back to the old glass plate cameras.
Okay.
And bit of sporting equipment. Here's hospital section here.
Mm-hmm.
Including a few things that people really take one look at and walk past. They bring back memories.
Okay. Yeah. So horror stories for some, I suppose. I can see we've got an original dental chair over there, Dr. George.
Yeah. And the old-fashioned drill.
Yes, I'm not a fan of dentistry, so come here, and if you have some flashbacks, we're not trying to scare you about the museum.
No, just through the door there is
Some ski equipment, yeah, there's a whole section of that.
A whole collection of skis.
Uh-huh.
Here, some years ago, we were approached, would we let them send our ski collection to an exhibition in New Orleans in America.
Right.
We said, no, we don't do that sort of thing here.
Yep.
A couple of days later, we get a phone call from Canberra. This is Bob Hawke talking.
Okay.
We want those skis to go to America.
Right.
So what else could you do?
Exactly. What could you say to the man?
So we sent half the skis to America, the left ones only, not the right ones.
Okay. Okay.
And they all came back.
They all came back. That was very clever planning there on your behalf, no doubt, John.
Yeah.
So is there anything else of interest here that you think that the listeners might like to come and see? You've got some magnificent, magnificent things here, really impressive.
Oh, yes. Well, in the shed out the back, we have all the old printing equipment that our local paper was printed on up until about 20 years ago.
Right.
And I don't know how heavy that press is, but a 20-ton jack will just lift one end of it at a time.
Okay.
It happens to be in our shed.
That's it, in your shed. And you've also got a section there of uniforms from some of the local lads that gave their lives or that passed later on in life when they come back from the war, the actual uniforms.
Well, one is Air Commodore Gehring, and that's about as high as you can get.
That's it. That's it. Yes. All right, John. Well, I think that's just about covered it for our listeners. I really appreciate your time.
And also up in the shed, there's a lot of all the old hand tools, axes, adzes, hand saws.
Okay.
And all that sort of stuff.
That sort of stuff they would have used to build their huts and cottages.
And Farming machinery.
So, listeners, there's a lot to see here. I must tell you, I've seen a lot of museums in small towns. This one's extremely impressive, John. And I've got to thank you for taking so much time to talk with us. That rug in itself, in that glass cabinet, if you're interested in anything like that, war memorabilia, this is definitely a place to not miss when you come through Corryong. Now, I'm going to play you a song, John. Have you got anything special that comes to mind?
Oh,
it's got to be Australian.
How about Slim Dusty and the man from Snowy River?
Ah, good on you, John. You're a man of my heart. All right, listeners, you stay around for The Man from Snowy River by Slim Dusty. And thank you so much, John Whitehead, and he's the Vice President here at the Man from Snowy River Museum here in Corryong. And we're going to be back with more Roman Oz straight after Slim Dusty.
There was movement at the station, for the word had passed around that the colt from Old Regret had got away and had joined the Wild Bush Horses. He was worth £1,000. So all the cracks had gathered to the fray. All the tried and noted riders from the stations near and far had mustered at the homestead overnight. For the bushmen love hard riding where the wild bush horses are, and the stock horse snuffs the battle with delight. There was Harrison who made his pile when Pardon won the cup, and the old man with his hair as white as snow. But few could ride beside him when his blood was fairly up. He would go wherever horse or man could go. And Clancy of the Overflow came down to lend a hand. No better horseman ever held the reins. For never horse could throw him while the saddle girths would stand. And he learned to ride while droving on the plains. And one was there, a stripling, on a small and weedy beast. He was something like a racehorse undersized, with a touch of time or pony, three parts thoroughbred at least, and such as are by mountain horsemen prized. He was hard and tough and wiry, just the sort that won't say die. There was courage in his quick, impatient tread, and he bore the badge of gameness in his bright and fiery eye, and the proud and lofty carriage of his head. But still so slight and weedy, one would doubt his power to stay. And the old man said, that horse will never do. For a long and tiring gallop, lad, you'd better stop away. Those hills are far too rough for such as you. So he waited sad and wistful, lonely Clancy stood his friend. Oh, I think we ought to let him come, he said. And I warrant he'll be with us when he's wanted at the end. For both his horse and he are mountain bred. Oh, he hails from Snowy River, up by Kosciuszko's side, where the hills are twice as steep and twice as rough, where a horse's hooves strike firelight from the flintstones every stride, and the man that holds his own is good enough. And the Snowy River riders on the mountains make their home, where the river runs those giant hills between. I have seen full many horsemen since I first commenced to roam, but no way yet such horsemen have I seen. So he went, they found the horses by the big mimosa clump. They raced away towards the mountain's brow. And the old man gave his orders, boys, go at 'em from the jump. No use to try for fancy riding now. And Clancy, you must wheel them, try and wheel them to the right, and ride boldly, lad, and never fear the spills. For never yet was rider that could keep that mob in sight if once they gained the shelter of those hills. So Clancy rode to wheel them, he was racing on the wing, where the best and boldest riders take their place. And he raced his stock horse past them, and he made the rangers ring with his stock whip as he met them face to face. Then they halted for a moment while he swung the dreaded lash, but they saw their well-beloved mountain full in view. And they charged beneath the stock whip with a sharp and sudden dash, and off into the mountain scrub they flew.
Then fast the horsemen followed where the gorges deep and black resounded to the thunder of their tread. And the stockwhips woke the echoes and they fiercely answered back from cliffs and crags that beetled overhead. And upward, ever upward, the wild horses held their way where Currajong and Mountain Ash grew wide. And the old man muttered fiercely, "We may bid the mob good day. No man could hold them down the other side." When they reached the mountain summit, even Clancy took a pull. It well might make the boldest hold their breath. The wild hop scrub grew thickly and the hidden ground was full of wombat holes, and any slip was death. But the man from Snowy River let the pony have his head, and he swung his stock whip round and gave a cheer. And he raced him down the mountain like a torrent down its bed, while the others stood and watched in very fear. He sent the flintstones flying, but the pony kept his feet. Oh, he cleared the fallen timber in his stride. And the man from Snowy River never shifted in his seat. It was grand to see that mountain horseman ride. Through the stringy box and saplings on the rough and broken ground, down the hillside at a racing pace he went. And he never drew the bridle till he landed safe and sound at the bottom of the terrible descent. He was right among the horses as they climbed the farther hill, and the watchers on the mountain standing mute saw him ply the stock whip fiercely. He was right among them still as he raced across the clearing in pursuit. Then they lost him for a moment where two mountain gullies met in the ranges. Oh, but a final glimpse reveals on a dim and distant hillside the wild horses racing yet, with the man from Snowy River at their heels. And he ran them single-handed till their sides were white with foam. He followed like a bloodhound on their track till they halted cowed and beaten. Then he turned their heads for home, and alone and unassisted brought them back. But his hardy mountain pony, he could scarcely raise a trot. He was blood from hip to shoulder from the spur. But his pluck was still undaunted and his courage fiery hot, for never yet was mountain horse a cur. And down by Kosciuszko, where the pine-clad ridges raise their torn and rugged battlements on high, where the air is clear as crystal and the white stars fairly blaze at midnight in the cold and frosty sky, and where around the overflow the reed beds sweep and sway to the breezes and the rolling plains are wide. Oh, the man from Snowy River is a household word today, and stockmen tell the story of his ride. And stockmen tell the story of his ride. And stockmen tell the story of his ride.
Gee, Phil, wasn't John Whitehead a wealth of information?
Exactly. And 90 years of age. Unbelievable.
I know. I hope I'm that good at that age.
Oh, listen, I think so too. If I was that sprightly at his age, I'd be a happy man. Now, Lynn, what are we going to talk about next?
We're going to do the High Country Rail Trail. Now, this trail hugs the shoreline of Lake Hume from Wodonga to Old Talangara and then continues on to Corryong. The old railway line was built back in 1887 and was used to transport material for the Snowy Mountains scheme. The last train headed out along this track back in 1978. The scenic ride takes in magnificent lake and mountain views with railway and immigration history along the way. There are magnificent mountain views, historical sites and the cool waters of Lake Hume to enjoy along the 35-kilometre trail from Wodonga to Old Talangara. From Old Talangara to Corryong, the trail takes 74 kilometres and takes you through pine plantations, state forest, historic timber trestle bridges and mountain views.
Oh, Lynn, I can hear a song coming on.
Have you got the Pushbike Song by the Mixtures?
Of course I've got the Pushbike Song by the Mixtures. Is that what you'd like to hear, Lynn?
Well, we've just been talking about bikes, so let's get on our bike and go.
All right, listeners. You stick around. We'll be back with more Roman Oz straight after the Mixtures, the Push Bike Song.
Riding along on the push bike, honey, when I noticed you. Riding downtown in a hurry, honey, down South Avenue. You look so pretty as you were riding along. You look so pretty as you were singing this song. Try catching up, but you were pedaling harder too. Riding along like a hurricane, honey, spinning out of you. You look so pretty as you were riding along. You look so pretty as you were singing this song. I sing the song. Around, round, wheels going round, round, round. Down, up, pedals, down, up, down. But I gotta get across to the other side of town before the sun.
Push Bike Song by the Mixtures. Geez, that's a good song, Lynn.
Yes, I thought you'd enjoy that, Phil.
Well, we haven't heard it for a while.
No, that's for sure. Now, you're going to head on down and see Jenny Boardman, and she's from the Man from Snowy River Festival.
If you've just joined us, I'm Phil C, and this is Roman Oz, and I am with Jenny Boardman, the General Manager for the Man from Snowy River Bush Festival. How are you today, Jenny?
Going well, thank you.
That's great. Thanks for taking the time to talk with me today. Just want to get some background information. First of all, on yourself, how long have you been associated with the Man from Snowy River Bush Festival?
Back in 1995, we were approached by historian Jonathan King, who came to town wanting to do a centenary celebration of the publication of the poem.
Okay.
And from that, he wanted to put together a horse event that reflected the poem and what horse people in the bush thought of the poem. So we created the Man from Snowy River Challenge event, which consists of six or seven small events, and the top scores out of those go into the finals. And it's never been done anywhere before. And we put it together, and we've sort of been running that event ever since.
So. Wow, so it's been going for quite a while now. But I understand that some other places are trying to replicate what you guys do. Is that right?
Yeah, it's created such a growth industry, I suppose. When you go back to those early days, very few people knew how to pack a pack horse, if okay. they even knew what one was.
Right.
How to shoe their own horse. They all got farriers in. It's a requirement of this event that as a good horseman, good bushman of the day would have known how to do all of those things and mm-hmm. be able to survive in the bush, to be able to muster cattle, have a good working dog, be able to ride a rough horse, also catching brumbies, of course, which yep. was almost a part of their lifestyle back in the day. And
right.
so we, by creating this event, we have brought a lot of that history back to life, but also at schools, and now we've got kids from as young as 7 year old, learning the tricks of the trade in that sort of thing. So we run events now. There's copy events in Gundagai, South Australia, Western Australia. So there's two or three in New South Wales now. So it's certainly something that's very, we're very pleased and proud to be part of it. And
fantastic.
It's a great reflection on our history.
Fantastic. Now, how long does the festival go for? When does it start?
It runs Thursday to Sunday every year, usually around Easter.
Uh-huh.
So we aim for roughly the first weekend in April every year, but subject to where Easter falls, we're either before or after it.
Okay.
And over the 4 days, we have a very diverse program. It's not just horses. We have working cattle dog events. We have an art show, bush poetry, music. There's a talent quest, street parade. We actually do the reenactment of the poem, which is another standalone event. It's extremely popular, and it just came about by a couple of our local horsemen wanting to have a bit of fun. So they said, let's run some horses. So we've choreographed now an event that attracts probably 6,000 people over the weekend just to go out and watch that. And you see some incredible action, and it looks just fantastic in the bush setting.
Fantastic. Now, 6,000 people, that would obviously bring a lot of revenue, a lot of income into the town, but where do you house them all? You couldn't possibly have 6,000 people here at one time.
No, that's very true. It's a BYO accommodation scenario, so we are very fortunate to have our rec reserve in Corryong is surrounded by the golf course, which is part of that rec reserve. And we fit in over 1,000 campers on that golf course. We also now have grown enough that we've got another paddock adjacent to the golf course where we fit in up to another 500 people. Also, to the competitors, of course, they've got to have a paddock separate from the general public for their horse camps and that type of thing. So she's a busy little town over the festival weekend. We think we get up to probably 7,500 people a day through the gates.
7,500 people a day. Wow, that's huge. That's bustling.
When you think the population of Corryong is about 1,200, I think.
Well, I was going to say, it's a tiny town. It's a beautiful town, and there's a lot to see here, but that must be a real shock. And, of course, a real blessing too, I guess, for the local people here that would be really looking forward to those sort of people coming through.
Well, events like this don't just run by themselves, as you'd be aware, and so we rely heavily on a volunteer base, and so the local community via all of the various clubs, they provide all of their volunteers, so it's then they earn income, which is then turned back into the community. So it's very much a community run event, and it's a not-for-profit organisation, so it's run by a board of volunteers as well. There's a staff here of about 3 or 4 people year-round that put it all together, but without those volunteers we don't have a show.
It couldn't exist, I guess.
And it's an amazing community, because probably the strongest feedback we get every year is what an incredible time they've had and how friendly and helpful the volunteers and the locals are. So that's a tremendous compliment.
Absolutely brilliant. Well, I'm just hoping that everything goes well for us for with the situation. Last year it was all cancelled, so I guess people that had all their tickets from last year, they'll be right to come back this year. And we're not sure yet as to whether or not we're going to be able to sell more, but you still would have a lot of people from last year, no doubt.
Oh, yes. Our supporters are amazing. You get on Facebook and you see, somebody might have a grumble, but there'll be 5 or 6 people. We don't have to argue our case. We've got so many people that, support what we're doing, understand the struggle that we're having to try and get this thing on the ground. So, they're the reason why you keep on battling, trying to get it across the line. So we're pretty confident now, touch wood and cross fingers, that that's going to happen this time round.
But brilliant.
There's always another year, and we'll be here to keep it going. Keep on keeping on.
So you have do you regularly have people from past year that regularly book every year, or is it just a one-off experience?
We've got many, many people that they'll tell you the story. I came back in 1995, and now my son and his family and. They come year after year, and it's quite a family in itself. And the grey nomad population. You know, you can be anywhere in Australia and around a campfire or a caravan park, and somebody will be talking about, you know, sort of the run down to Victoria for and make sure the festival, go and see that festival.
The Man from Snowy River Festival, yeah, yes. Absolutely. Well, unfortunately, I'll be missing it this year, Jenny, but fingers crossed, I will definitely be here next year. Well, fantastic. Thank you so much for your time, Jenny.
You're That's very welcome.
Really great. Now, I'm going to play you an Aussie song. I always play a song after the chat. And who's your favourite? Anyone in particular?
Well, based on my mother's love for this guy, was Slim Dusty, and, you know, the current circumstances, people would probably appreciate there's a song that Slim does about old riders in the grandstand. So I think that reflects the festival and our ethos and where we're at the moment. So
fantastic.
Slim on.
All right, let's play Slim Dusty's, what was it again, Old?
Old Riders in the Grandstand.
Thank you so much, Jenny Boardman, and she's the general manager of the Man from Snowy River Bush Festival. Stick around, listeners. After this track, we'll be back with more Roman Oz.
I'm seated in the grandstand at a big-time rodeo, with my walking stick beside me as I watch the scene below. There are young'uns riding outlaws as I did when young and free. And I wonder, are there many old ex-riders here like me? The horses they are riding couldn't buck to save their hide. Oh, I'd like to see these young'uns on the ones I used to ride. I've used the likes of Spinifex for a night horse on the run, and Brahma bulls like Wadjera, we rode them just for fun. Saddles they are using are designed to hold you in, and the halter shanks are silky so as not to hurt your skin. We rode in flattened polies in the days of long ago, and could have rolled a smoke aboard the likes of Curio. The steers they use for dogging are no bigger than a calf, and the time they take to throw them make us old-timers laugh. We used to scruff big mickeys twice the size in cattle yards. Oh, but that was many years ago, way back when times were hard. These young'uns dress so leery in their fancy cowboy suits. We used to ride in moleskins and a pair of blucher boots. For all our glory's vanished, we're forgotten men it seems. Old riders in the grandstand, alone with all our dreams.
What a great song, listeners. Old Riders in the Grandstand by the old grand Slim Dusty himself. And now Lynn and I, we are going to talk to you all about the historic Trestle Bridge near Katong.
So when you get to that part where you can actually park up the van, there's a board here that says, "Welcome to Mount Lawson State Park." Mount Lawson State Park is approximately 13,150 hectares, and it contains steep slopes and ranges with outstanding scenic views available from its rocky peaks and ridges. The park has outgoing significance for Aboriginal people, and evidence of past occupation still exists. Now, the park contains highly diverse vegetation, the black cypress pine, woodlands of the northern slopes, and a rare clay heatherland community are a special botanical significance. Now, enjoying the park, there's so many things to do here. You've got the Conic Range, which is about 7 kilometres. You've also got the Kotong Creek, which is 8 kilometres, Mount Lawson Summit, 14 kilometres, the Currajongs. You can access those via the rugged and exposed northern slopes of the park from Murray River Road. Make the short but demanding climb to Valley View. Now, it's 3 kilometres return
and look out over the Murray River floodplain. If time and energy permit, continue walking to the waterfalls and deep rock pools with Flaggy Creek Gorge. Now, that's a total of 14 kilometres return. So other things to do here, you've got picnicking and camping. Basic picnic or camping facilities are provided at Mount Lawson Summit, Cochon Creek campsites, Conic Range and the Currajongs. It's a lovely place, it really is. Sightseeing and touring, Mount Lawson Road is suitable for conventional vehicles in dry weather only. There are a number of four-wheel drive tracks to explore, but some are closed seasonally between mid-June and November for environmental and safety reasons. Now, remember, this is very important, vehicle access is limited to formed roads and tracks open to the public. So please do avoid the muddy tracks where you will leave wheel ruts and, of course, cause erosion. Remove trees from the tracks rather than drive around them. Unsealed winding roads can be hazardous. Slower speeds will allow time to enjoy the scenery and also avoid animals. Now, don't forget the historic railway trestle bridge. Take a short walk. As I discussed earlier, the Wodonga Kajiwa railway line to the timber trestle bridge over Boggy Creek. It really is well worth seeing. I fully recommend you take the time. Bring your picnic lunch or bring yourself a thermos at least and enjoy the ambience of the beautiful place.
Here we are at the historic Boggy Creek Trestle Bridge. Numerous trestle bridges found along the Wodonga Kajiwa railway line are a feature that give it a unique place in the railway history of Australia. This bridge over Boggy Creek is thought to be constructed from blue gum, a tall eucalypt species found growing locally in moist areas. The piles are each marked with the month and the year of construction, as well as the P and D to indicate whether it was placed or driven into the foundations. This bridge is a four-pile design in order to give a greater stability and the ability to carry heavier loads. Earlier, two-pile design bridges were upgraded to four piles in order to support some trains which weighed in excess of 500 tonnes. Many of the original bridges were replaced or updated with modern materials. This bridge, however, remains as it was constructed back in 1915.
So far away.
that was a great song, Phil. Little River Band's Love is a Bridge. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, aren't you meant to be meeting up with Roger and Helen, full-time travellers?
Oh, that's right, Lynn, and I am right onto it.
And here we are at the Bundelong Punt. Is that right? The Bundelong Punt, yes, at Owens River Junction. And I'm with Roger and Helen. Now, Roger, whereabouts is the Bundelong Punt?
Let's off the Murray Valley Highway, about 6 k's before you get to Bundelong. It's natural where it meets the Murray River.
Uh-huh.
And where we are here, Williams's Bridge, it is a big junction of contributories, I suppose you would say, that meet it and run into the Ovens and then on down into the Murray.
Fantastic, because obviously if I say to my listeners, the Bundelong Punt, they're going to go, where the heck is that? So you've just given us a bit of an idea. We're still in New South Wales, aren't we?
Victoria.
We're in Victoria here.
Yes.
Very close to the border.
Very close.
Okay. Just again for the listeners. And you guys are now, I understand that both Roger and Helen, you've both been full-time travelling together for quite a while. Tell us about that. How long have you been doing it?
Oh, pretty close to 11 years.
11 years. And 11 years for you too, Helen?
Yes, 11 years, and I love it.
Yeah. What made you choose to, you know, give up the luxuries of living in a house and live on the road full time?
Well, I was always an outdoor girl, and I just brought the children all up to love all the wildlife out here that God's given us to live with and love.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just always, why do I have to go home? Can't I just stay out here and enjoy it? So this was my big decision and I should have done it a long time ago.
Mm-hmm. Now, I understand you were doing a bit of camping and caravanning before you met Roger.
Yes.
And you were just doing it by yourself?
Yes, and a little puppy dog, and mainly met up with friends where I went.
Right.
So that was great to have them there with me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what about Roger? Where did you meet Roger?
Actually, on the riverbank.
On the riverbank?
Yeah, he had his own caravan and set up like I did. And,
right.
But he was a long way down the riverbank, but every now and then you'd run into different friends along the riverbank, and like you do while we're out here, all over Australia, everybody's just so happy and jolly.
Right.
Yeah, and communication and good fun with people is my life.
Fantastic.
I couldn't do it just sitting in the four little walls at home anymore.
No?
Yeah.
So what about you, Roger? Had you actually sort of retired? Were you full-time on the road when you met Helen, or were you still working? What happened for you? How did it happen?
Yes, I probably just retired, I suppose you would say.
Right.
Yeah, I was probably retired about 4 months quicker than I should have.
Okay, but, fair enough.
The opportunity was there, so I thought, right, oh, well, here it goes. We grab the bull by the horns and away we go. So
okay.
I bought a second-hand van out of Chilton, and the patrol I bought off a fellow that used to be up the road that I used to work on his grapevines.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah, so we started off with that.
Right.
We moved around and got to Western Australia and had some funny times over there. It was great. Driving around with no fuel sort of thing upset somebody for a little while.
Okay.
I just wanted to test out how many k's you could get out of the tank.
So you ran out of fuel at one stage? Really?
Drove it dry.
Okay, but you had spare fuel on board or no? You did. Yeah. Thank heavens for that. Okay.
All right. Anyway.
Yeah?
We went to one garage and no pumps broken down. Went to the next garage. We only filled the local people's cars.
Oh, really?
So wow. I just hobbled along the road and somebody was fuming.
Yes, okay.
But anyway, when it did conk out, I just got the jerry can out the back and siphoned some in.
Okay, fair enough.
So but I knew didn't how know far... he had that jerry can full.
So you were really sort of panicking, thinking, well, where were you? In the middle of pretty much nowhere, or...?
Yeah, I suppose you'd probably say that. They were only little tiny towns, like, that's what I say. They only supplied fuel to the locals.
The locals.
And the one where we thought we might have got it was on a bit of a beaten track. And
yep.
Oh, no, she's all out of order, mate. She broke down.
Well, I notice now you've got this great truck. You've got an Iveco truck. I don't imagine you'd run out of fuel with that beast of a thing, would you? How many litres does that carry on board?
90 underneath in the tank, and we've got another 40 in two jerry cans.
Okay. So you've got plenty of fuel?
Oh, that'll take you 700,
700-800 kilometres. Why did you choose a truck? I mean, most people drive around when they're full-time on the road. They've got 200 series Land Cruisers or big Nissan Patrols or whatever. You don't see that many trucks. A lot of people are getting into these big utes like Rams and GMCs and everything, but a truck, I mean, the way you got it set up, it's fantastic. So was that the reason you wanted something so you didn't have to worry about weights and measures like you do with a lot of cars and things, or... what was your inspiration for a truck?
Well, I thought the way they were starting to measure up or weigh up vehicles.
Yeah.
I got a big double swag and I thought, well, this thing here, we get it built up and we can just leave the van somewhere in a yard.
Yep.
And we can go bush or we can go to the seaside and we can
yep.
get to places to have a look where other people won't go, because if with your...
Toyotas and your stuff, Land Cruisers.
You just haven't got a lot of room. By the time you've got your stuff in there, you've yep. got nowhere to put your bed. So,
yes, yes.
And that's why we benched that out there. You can just slide in there sideways and roll the swag out.
It's an impressive rig. And you got a boat loader on top of there as well. You obviously love your fishing.
Boat loader, car, fridge, hot gas water at the back there to have a shower.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, winch to pick the motor up and put that up onto the side of the truck. Remote to put the boat back down to the ground, back up. Not too much lifting to do.
No, well, that's the idea, because, I mean, as you're getting older, you don't want to be straining lifting up boats and mucking about with motors. So this setup of yours is pretty much all automatic. You just press a button and things start to lift up and lift down. And so you can enjoy all the luxuries of fishing and being on the great outdoors, but with little to no sweat involved.
That's about right.
Yep.
We unloaded over there at that little gap
yep.
where we're sitting.
Mm-hmm.
And all the boys were down here and I just let her down, pushed her into the water, put the motor on, give her a kick with my foot. And they said, well, look at that. The whole bugger's got his put in already.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
It really is impressive. And I guess the main thing too is you're out here off grid, so you're using your solar panels mostly for your power.
Yep.
And you mentioned before you did have a generator just in case you had a few bad days of bad weather.
Yep.
Or if it gets so stinking hot, you can run that for the air conditioner.
That's correct, yep.
Which is not that often, you said. You usually just
follow a shadow around
and stay in the cool. Great
there's
idea.
There's always a breeze blowing under the van. If you follow it around, you'll find out there's always a breeze blowing under the van.
Yep. Alrighty, now I'm just noticing here too for you, Helen, you've got a spinning wheel here.
Yes, I have.
And what do you do with it?
Well, at this stage, this year I've just been learning to spin with the COVID lockdown because we haven't been able to travel too far.
Right.
I'm really enjoying it, and when Roger's out fishing, hopefully catching a fish,
yes.
I'm here spinning away.
Okay.
And filling in a few hours a day, and I'm really enjoying it.
Okay. That's excellent.
Yeah. Otherwise, I love my camp cooking.
Uh-huh.
I love cooking on the firewood camp ovens. And
yes.
Make cakes, pudding, roast, whatever you ask for, I'll dish it up for you.
In a camp oven?
Yeah.
Under wood and a fire?
Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
I've got the little tripod and... billies and everything that go with it.
Yeah. So you can pretty much live, well, you have been doing it for 10 years.
Yes.
Completely off the grid.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Would you ever go back to normality, as I'd like to call it, you know, living in a house, paying an electricity bill, or you think that this is it for you for the rest of your lives now?
I think this is it for me.
Yep.
Don't know about Rod, but he seems to be settled in. But
it all depends on your health.
Yeah.
Our health is... The big number one,
of course,
of controlling that one, I think.
Yeah.
And I think while I'm out fishing, I'm enjoying myself better than sitting in some home.
Yes, exactly.
That's some poor person around about that's not doing too well. But
yes.
Anyway. Yeah.
But as far as it goes, you both look very healthy.
Oh, yes.
I won't ask your ages. But you're obviously enjoying what you're doing, and you're going to keep doing it for as long as you possibly can.
This is it. You pull up somewhere, and there's always a bush walk or something. But if you're at home, you just turn the idiot box on, and that would be it. And you don't use your muscles as much at home as you do out here.
Okay.
And we both notice each other as stronger and more healthy
for doing it, absolutely. Yeah. And in the 10 years you've both been on the road, you've travelled around Australia a few times, I imagine?
Yep.
Yeah,
inland. Yeah.
So inland and followed the coast up and down, or you made?
Yeah. I mean, there's probably only a little bit we haven't done. That's out to Burralula and up to what's the place up the top? Gove, is it?
Yeah, Gove.
Nullumboy, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, we've been to Bourke and into the Gulf, back around.
You're never lonely. There's always happy hour at 5 o'clock every day.
Yeah, 5 o'clock every day, there's always happy hour. And that is so true. I guess one of the things I've noticed about being on the road myself, and I'm not full-time on the road, is that the people you meet along the travels are always ready to sit down, have a drink with you and share a story and just make the day that much more pleasant and much more enjoyable.
Yes.
Fantastic.
And we all learn from each other too.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
Went to the tip and put my foot in the water up at the tip.
Okay. Yes, you did. Yeah.
There's the island, went across to there. We've had a good time.
Yeah. Fantastic.
All over the west.
Yes.
Yep.
Is there anywhere, I know everybody's got their idea of what's a favourite spot or what's the best spot, but for you, Roger, is there one that you really just love to return back to each time?
Oh, there's probably one or two as far as a bit of fishing, but as I say, people say what you've just spoken about, and really it doesn't matter. You get out of life what you see, and every town is different.
Yep.
People are different. You talk about different stuff, and I don't think there's any special spot that you'd really say you could go and camp at. But really, if I was going to uproot and leave from here, I definitely think I'd go out to Queensland somewhere I could do a bit more dam fishing and the big dams up there. Barramundi fishing.
Yep. And what about you, Helen? Is there one that really warms your heart? You think, geez, I wish I could get Roger to do that one again, or?
I got a little soft spot for Port Douglas.
Okay.
Yeah, I like the little town up there. It's got everything that you ever need up there.
That's it.
Pretty well every little town has got its own little gold mine of its own.
Yes.
And lovely markets around and.
Something for everybody.
There is, yeah.
All right.
Yeah, and the vegetables and the fruits in Queensland are just unbelievable. And down in Victoria, it's lovely green grass and snowfields, everything. We've got it all.
Got it all. Australia
We've been very blessed.
We are. Australia really is the greatest country in the world. Yeah. And I don't just say that. I mean, if it's such a bad place, why is it all the backpackers are coming here? It's the most incredible country, and people really should get out and enjoy it.
Yeah.
You're pretty right there.
Well, I'm just going to have to wind this up now, Roger and Helen. I've got to play you a song, as all my listeners know, and it's got to be Australian. So you've got a favourite Australian singer there, Roger?
Oh, I suppose we'll have John Williamson.
Yep.
And All Among the Gum Trees.
Home Among the Gum Trees. What do you think, Helen?
I reckon that hits the nail on the head there.
All righty. Well, stick around, listeners, for more of Roaming On straight after Johnny Williamson's Home Among the Gum Trees.
I've been around the world a couple of times or maybe more. I've seen the sights, I've had delights on every foreign shore. But when my mates all ask me the place that I adore, I tell them right away. What do we tell them? Give me a home among the gum trees, with lots of plum trees. A sheep, a tuk, a kangaroo, a clothesline out the back, veranda out the front, and an old rocking chair. You can see me in the kitchen cooking up a roast, or Vegemite on toast, just you and me, a cup of tea. Later on we'll settle down and mull up on the porch and watch the possums play. Give me a home among the gum trees, with lots of plum trees. A sheep, a tuk, a kangaroo, a clothesline out the back, veranda out the front, and an old rocking chair. There's a Safeway's up the corner and a Woolies down the street, and a brand new place they've opened up where they regulate the heat. But I trade them all tomorrow for a single bush retreat with a Kookaburra's corporate.
that's a plum tree. A bong or two of a kangaroo, a clothesline out the back, the render out the front, and an old rocking chair. Some people like their houses with fences all around. Others live in mansions and some beneath the ground. But me, I like the bush, you know, with rabbits running round. And a pumpkin vine out the back is your turn. Give me a home among the gum trees, with lots of plum trees. The sheep are doing the back, the horse one out the back, the red one out the front, and all rocking chairs. Give me a home among the gum trees, with lots of plum trees. A sheep are doing the
What a great show that was, Phil, and some interesting information and also some wonderful music
as
played.
As requested by the people we interview. Now, what a country-based program it was. We had a couple of Slim Dusty songs and we had a Johnny Williamson song for the full-time travellers.
Yes.
And then you asked for the pushbike song.
Yes, I haven't heard that song for years.
And then there was the Little River Band. What a great song. Now, what are we going to be doing on next week's program, Lee?
Well, I think you're going to be chatting to Rod at Yarrawonga.
Oh, Rod. Now, let me tell you, listeners, this chap is he's a bit of a bushman, Rod. We met Rod on the banks of the Murray River in Yarrawonga, and here's a guy who actually kind of lives on the land, okay? He takes the water out of the river, boils it up in an old boiler on his open fire, and he's got his chainsaw to keep him supplied with wood. Very interesting character, Rod. Now, what about you, Lynn? You're going to Stan Killeen, the winery, is that correct?
That's correct, and I'm going to have a chat with Wendy there.
Okay, and then after that, I'm going to be talking to a gentleman, Alan Saunders. Now, Alan's into the silo art.
Yes.
And that was at Bendigo.
Goorambat. Actually, yes. We did the silo trail out of Yarrawonga on the way down to Bendigo.
Okay, fantastic. Now, if time permits also, Lynn, we just got to see.
Yes, we're going to see how we go and maybe head back into New South Wales.
Okay. And, of course, we're heading towards
Deniliquin,
that's right. All right, listeners, so there you go. We've got a great program lined up for you next week, along with a fantastic selection of music as requested by the people we interview. So make sure you follow us on Facebook.
We hope you enjoyed the show, listeners.
If you missed any, check out our Facebook page or allaussieradio.com.au.
Tune in next week for more Roman Oz.